So if you want to be a high performer in the world, or you want to be an elite athlete, you want to be an elite businessman, you want to be an elite healer or whoever, no, whatever. It doesn't have to be you do something that you get paid a lot. It's just, do you want to be a high performing partner? Do you want to be the best partner to someone? Do you want to be the best parent to someone? You know, like all of these things are tied to, you want to be able to make the best decisions about your situation. And the way that you make the best decisions is by having the best information to go off based on what's happening.
Welcome to The Principles. I'm called Adrian. That was Nick Lavery. Nick is an Olympic athlete. He took part in the Tokyo Olympics in the rowing for Australia in the rowing eight. He also took part in the 2022 World Championships. And he knows a thing or two about peak performance, about long, hard training schedules in order to get where you want to go. I asked him to come on the show because he was mentioned during my podcast with Kate Zoltan, the co-creator of the Undo app. If you haven't caught that, I'd encourage you to have a watch of that short video. It's only about 30 minutes long. This is a really interesting discussion with Nick, where we talk about peak performance, about hyper performance, about being an elite athlete, and also about why he is so passionate about the Undo app and about how that helps him in all aspects of his life, not just the physical training aspects of his life. Now, he's retired from the professional sports world now, but he's acting as a coach and he still has an incredibly active life. I also think that the Undo app is incredibly powerful. It was a missing piece for me in terms of allowing me to get more out of my life, but also to heal aspects of my physical body that were not healing as I hoped they would. If you'd like to try the app as you've watched this video, then see the description below. There's a code you can use in there to get a month on us so you can give it a try. And without further ado, this is a really interesting discussion with Nick Lavery. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did, and I'll see you in the next video. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye. Nick, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me, Adrian. It's a pleasure.
Now, we had a good chat the other day, didn't we?
Yeah, really good.
Did you intentionally get into rowing, or did it just kind of happen?
I wanted to try it in year 10. It just kind of happened, I think, in terms of how it got. I got as far in it as I did. That's more the point. It wasn't something that I'd been dreaming about since I was a little kid, as I think is probably not the case with a lot of rowers. It's probably more that the dreams of success in it come around as you go in it. And as you start to get a little bit of success, you're like, oh, maybe I can take this a little further. I never had any real aspirations of going to the Olympics, but I was always found myself kind of close enough, you know? And so because I was just close enough, I just kept going. And then that got me to the Olympics. So, yeah.
It's an interesting thing you mentioned in the conversation we had the other day prior to this one, where you attributed a lot of your success to just showing up on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that was the, I think, yeah, I don't think I'm the first person to have said that by any means, but yeah. It definitely felt that way for me. That's all I can say, is it definitely didn't feel like there was any kind of special thing really that I was doing other than just, I'm there every morning. And I said this the other day to you as well. It's just, I also know a lot of people that showed up every morning just as much as I did and didn't get as far as I did. So there's talent is obviously plays a bit of a part there, and then obviously some good fortune along the way. But it's for sure that if you don't show up, there's definitely not going to be, nothing's going to happen for you, you know? So.
Yeah, well, I think that's true of a lot of opportunities. And you made an interesting point where you said there is less competition than some people may think in all sorts of things.
Mm.
And just consistently doing it, consistently working at it will bring success.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually just on the phone to my dad a little bit earlier and talking about this, and that there's a lot of, there's a lot of talk these days with AI coming out and automation and all of these things that we're trying to do, and so that we can streamline things and get rid of some of the tedious tasks and focus all on the big picture and stuff. But I think there's a little bit of a trap there, which can kind of maybe appeal to our inherent, maybe a little bit of inherent like need for efficiency, or you could say laziness of just wanting to avoid effort if we don't have to. But I think there's a certain quality to stuff that we put time and effort into and just show up and keep doing, even if it's not the our favorite thing, or we have a preference to not do it. So yeah, I think it's definitely still quite applicable even today. Now things are getting automated and there's more opportunity to not show up. Is it if you are people are, I think people, the fact that everything can be automated now makes stuff that is done by humans and is natural a lot more valuable. I think people will probably start to value that a lot more, so, which is a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Yeah.
What was your training regime like in terms of intensity and frequency? It must have been pretty hard as you got towards the Olympics and stuff.
Yeah, for that period leading up to the Olympics, it was 6 days a week, three sessions a day, 5 days a week, and then two sessions on Saturday. And that's 3 weight sessions a week. Pretty much every other session is going to be either rowing or an erg in the afternoon or something. So that's on the rowing machine. So you're probably looking at about, I don't know total hours, but you're looking at probably about 5 plus hours of exercise a day.
Wow. Pretty much. Okay.
yeah. It's pretty, I train twice a day. Still pretty frequently throughout the week. But sometimes it's just once a day. And I look back on it and I go, I don't know how I got through it. It's a bloody miracle, honestly.
What sort of that must have taken a toll on you physically and mentally.
Yeah. I think the toll physically, I probably didn't notice because of the way I got through it was because I kind of disconnected a bit from the effect of what I was actually doing to myself.
Yeah.
And it was a really good thing to be able to do early on.
Yeah.
When I was still relatively fresh. If you look at it not in terms of each day I'm fresh, but more in terms of in life I was fresh to some extent, So you're young. When you're young, you're still fresh and you've got a lot of you're not bogged down by the effects of life yet. And so if you disconnect to get a lot of work done, you can get some reward from that when you're young. But over, when I was rowing at that elite level, I was there for 4 years or so pushing at that level. It was fine in the first year and I got good gains from that. But then the second, third, and then last year was by far the hardest. Even though it was my most successful year in terms of external achievements, like how hard it felt for me to do it was definitely the hardest. And it was because all of that disconnection, which I'd used early on, that was the mental effect that it had on me, was it drove me to kind of disconnect to be able to just keep staying in the discomfort of the training. All of that was gradually catching up to me. And then I had to deal with whatever training I was doing on a day-to-day basis, plus all of the stuff that I just not felt like, you can imagine how that keeps accumulating,
Oh, well, it's going to get worse and worse and worse every day.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you just feel like you're just carrying so much with you, and that happened to me over the period of an Olympic cycle, you could say 4 years or so. But the it's not something that is unique to elite athletes, although a lot of elite athletes probably put themselves through something similar, but a lot don't as well. A lot do it very, very well and very naturally. But it's a good, metaphor maybe you could say or it's a good anecdote that also applies to a lot of people, just because you don't just get the stress of life accumulating in you from exercise stress, but from any stress. And if you're not willing to feel then and resolve that as you go, then it'll build up and you'll feel like you're dragging a lot with you.
Yeah, which will lead well into the talk we're going to have in a few minutes about the full body meditation. Mm. But before we get to that, you mentioned to me the other day that you tried other mind-based meditations, as I had.
Yeah.
And so what were you looking into at the time and why did you even want to get into that?
I'd say I was mentally distressed a little bit when I left high school, just a bit lost. And when you're in school, you kind of just carried through it, right? Like you're just there because everyone tells you you need to go to school and you're doing your learning and you're showing up every day, and then all of a sudden that's gone, and then you have to start making decisions about your life. And I think that was probably
it's a big load, isn't it?
Yeah, quite quickly, that you're not really prepared for, which is no, I haven't really thought about it like that before, but it is obviously a big it's a big load to be put on you very early. And that was it was a distressing period for me. And so I started meditating before I started rowing seriously. And I just started using, normal Headspace, or, I rotated through a fair few of them, And mostly that was because I found that after a while you kind of get bored of whatever that one has to offer, because you're like, yeah, well, this is not doing that much for me anymore. So you switch to the next one and you go, Headspace is the one that comes to mind, but there's 10% happier or calm or balance or there's hundreds of them these days. I think we're going to talk about that, but yeah, it's really, you just find that I just found that it was so much work to keep doing. It felt like effort. I have to be disciplined about this. I have to get up every morning. I have to sit there for 10, 20 minutes and focus on watching my thoughts, in that awareness type meditation that mindfulness is, And now after a while, 3 or 4, 5 years of doing that, I was just like, this is just too much effort and I don't really think that I'm getting any benefit out of it. So I just stopped doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, I didn't notice any real decline in mental health or anything. It just kind of stayed the same. And I was like, okay, so this wasn't really doing that much. I maybe just believed that it was.
That's interesting. My experience, because I've been meditating 50 years, I've told you before, that the most I get from the meditation these days is simply the ability to focus my mind on one particular thing, so I can kill all the mind chatter. I can stay really hyper-focused on something. That's been the main benefit of the mind-based meditations for me for such a long time.
Mm.
There's been less physical benefits until I found what we're going to talk about now. So I'm curious, how did you come across Matthew Zoltan's meditation process?
I went through a bit of I did a lot of reading on, traditional psychology and all that kind of stuff. And I came across a lot of Carl Jung's work, and he talked about something called the night sea journey, which was like, it's that journey kind of within, right? Because you get to a point in life and you go, all right, I got some stuff I got to figure out. Like this is not everything's working right now. I'm confused and I don't know why I'm in pain or distressed. And I got to that point. And so I went on this, you could call it night sea journey, I guess. But went through all of the, the standard, read all the books on standard psychology and then the psychodynamic stuff. And then the, I got through to some work by a guy called Peter Levine, which you might have heard of. And also Bessel van der Kolk as well, with Body Keeps a Score. And so I started to get this idea. I was like, okay, something's happening in the body, And these other methods, they come up with, they seemed very they had gatekeepers in a sense, and that you needed to be with that expert to be taken through that process. So if you didn't have the $250, probably more, to be working with these people. Also, they would have very limited amount of time, considering the amount of traumatized people in the world. You're just like, I was like, okay, so this is great to read this book. And yes, I was getting that idea that things are happening in the body, that that's where everything needs to heal. But like I said, I was like, they felt completely inaccessible. And who knows how right they are. I don't think they are that right because they are so inaccessible. And then I read, Gabor Mate and all that, and he's talking about the same thing. It's all stored physically. All of our trauma is stored physically that we need to get, and we need to be able to kind of get this trauma out or heal this trauma physically in the body. And then I don't know where I got the idea about feeling that was something that was important to start doing. But for some reason, some kind of conclusion that I needed to learn how to feel. I guess at some point I probably acknowledge that I wasn't feeling very much and that I was kind of very, I honestly, until I found Undo, I didn't even know what bloody feeling was. But eventually I found the Paul Cech conversation with Matthew and Paul Cech. And then, listened to that podcast. And almost as soon as I heard Matthew's voice, I was like, okay, this guy knows. And then I just listened to that and I don't even remember what they talked about in the podcast, but it just clicked almost immediately. And I was like, this is something worth trying. And then when I found out they had an app, I was like, you're kidding. Like, I can just do it by myself. I don't have to go to this guy, you know? So then I obviously downloaded the app almost immediately. And then I've just been on this, it's been so important to me and so profound and useful for my situation. And I think for other people as well, that I've really made it like something that I'm passionate about learning very deeply and also teaching. So, yeah.
So could you give some specific examples maybe of your physical health or mental health or life in general that you think it's really benefited you?
Oh, I don't even, it seems so, it's been funny, I don't think about it too much now. I just know if I look at how I am now versus how I was a year or two ago, that calmness.
Could you summarize that?
Yeah, it's just the confusion is like not completely gone, but like 90% of the way gone, you know? And so all that confusion, the things that I was confused about in life are just not things that confuse me anymore because the answer is very, very simple, you know? So there's, and that is also goes to there's pain and stuff that I was having in my body that I didn't know how to, that was actually something that kind of pushed me out of rowing. I kept getting persistent pain in my right knee, on the inside of my right knee. And I just, it was that I was constantly fidgeting and trying different things and trying to like engage certain areas and like perfect movement to make the knee better. And I just tried so hard while I was rowing to fix it and get it right. And I just couldn't do it by thinking about it the way that I was.
Say, we try, but we can't.
I couldn't. It's not something that you can. It's not understanding how your body works and how you are, which is just a body, is really not something that your brain is capable of understanding. Your brain is capable of. Your thinking is capable of understanding. Your thinking is capable of describing and interpreting what you are experiencing, but that is not understanding. It's just a function, right? And so I was getting so, I was constantly trying to fix, that's how, because I thought there was something wrong with it, that with that pain. And so now I, you know, that eventually get to that point where he's like, if I just leave it alone, if I stop trying to fix it and I just let it be how it is, how actually is that? And that is actually how you start to understand it. And then as you start to understand it, you actually realize that these things are kind of these corrections that the body needs to be making and these things that need to recover and heal are things that the body takes care of by itself. It's not something that needs conscious attention or guidance from an external source, which, you know, nowadays a lot of our thinking is made up of what we've just gathered in from the world. So you could say that thinking and trying to control things and fix things by thinking is still trying to fix things with an external source. So the way that the body fixes things is from itself. It heals by itself, you know? And so just that learning to, that's one of the biggest things that I continue to keep learning with it every day. It just is something that I feel like I've learned, but it's just constantly being reinforced by experience, you know? And my experience of starting to understand myself this way is continuously reinforcing that this is the only way that we can understand ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and that has brought so much clarity and so much that now I just don't need to worry about, you know, like even silly things for me personally, like silly things like thinking there's like a correct way for me to be walking and that I need to be walking a certain way, you know, for that to be like, you know, not necessarily functional, but like that I need to look a certain way when I'm walking, or that my legs need to move a certain way for it to be like good or acceptable. Like that was all just ideas that I had. And you imagine every step that you take throughout a day worrying about that, you know, and how much mental load that would put on you, that you then, it sounds so silly, but it is genuinely something that I like was thinking about all the time. And now it's like, no, I just walk.
Yeah.
And my legs do it how they need to kind of do it. And that's just, it sounds kind of silly when it's coming out of my mouth, like saying it like this, but it really is something else.
No, I get you. I know when I was younger, I don't do it as much now, but I'd be running across really rough terrain and boulders and stuff like that. If I tried to think it through, I'd end up really getting hurt, falling off, smashing into things. If I just said, you know, to my legs, do your shit and leave them to get on with it, we made great progress and never got hurt.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, that's what I coach with people now, specifically, you know, with some athletes, you know, who are trying to perfect what they're doing.
Yeah.
A lot of it is you're putting so much effort into thinking about how you should be doing whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, right? So you're playing basketball, or you're rowing, or you're cycling, or running, or whatever it is. You're putting so much mental effort and thinking about it into it that you're actually taking yourself away from it, and you're slowing yourself down by that. The more that you can drop, it's kind of in a sense the opposite of coaching, because you're trying to get rid of people's ideas about what perfect technique looks like. And then, or what they should be doing to make whatever they're doing like perfect technique, and instead replacing that with, how do I understand what feels natural and balanced, you know? And what feels natural and balanced is when you're not trying to make it any other way than how it is, you know? And so that's really that's what I'm trying to do with my kind of coaching and that high performance type thing is that.
Okay, so you're bringing the whole kind of methodology and the ethos of undo into that physical realm as well.
It is inherently physical undo. Like that's it is what it's about. It's about physical meditation, you know, the meditation of the body. Whereas this is just a application of it into movement, you know. But there's applications of undo. This is something that I think is what's so amazing about it, is it's going to, and why I'm really passionate about the high performance side of what this stuff can do, is because this, all of the lessons that you learn in undo about trying to be naturally yourself in whatever it is that you're doing has literally infinite applications to all of the technical mechanical things that we need to get done in the real world. And I don't know what they are for if you're an engineer or you're an architect or a builder or whatever, but there'll be some natural intelligence to whatever that craft is that you do, or whatever that skill is that you have, that you'll be able to amplify by getting out of your own way and doing it naturally, free of ideas about how you think it should be done, you know? And there's just limitless applications to the teaching of the natural meditation. So it is, yes, I've taken a physical spin on it, but in the sense of just movement or athleticism or something like that. And the undo at its purest form is just, how can you do it when you're sitting still? But then you can take that. It's like, how can we do this in life, in everything? You know, so there's so much opportunity for it.
That's a really good answer, because you also answered about three questions in a row there as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really awesome. Cool. Yeah, but that's what happens, isn't it? Because when you relax and just flow with it, and you just do what the easy path is, the natural path, everything becomes so much clearer. I found that, you know, when I did bodybuilding when I was younger, and if I tried to focus on technique, I got hurt. And if I just focused on what felt balanced, it worked, but I never pinned them together properly until I came across Matthew's work.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's something that's exactly how I experienced my rowing when I was younger. You know, it was, I was, to some extent, stubborn, and I didn't want to really listen to coaches, because I felt what I was doing in my body, you know, and I just was like, no, this feels right. I'll just keep going doing it my way, you know. And they'd tell me, no, it's wrong. You want to do it this way. You want to do it that way. And I'd be like, oh, okay, whatever, and just keep going that way. But there's a little bit of like, that was coming from a place of just ignorance in a sense, in that I was actually, yeah, I think Matthew talked about this in your podcast with him. He's like, before he went into the monastery and became a monk, he was actually functioning as a pretty well-rounded and whole human being. But you don't know that until you've fully disconnected and then had to come back,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that's that. That was, for me, when I was young and doing sport and athleticism, I was disconnected in some ways, but more or less I was just following my own path and doing whatever felt right. But as I went further on, I started to get more and more tied to the opinions of coaches, and you was using that as a verification of whether I was doing good enough or whether I was doing the right thing. And I lost that sense, that sense of myself. And then since I left, it's been a bit of a path of getting that back and understanding what that process was that got me into that disconnection, and then really understanding the process of getting it out. And it gives you that full picture, you know.
So what do you think of your overall fitness now compared to then, with what you know now and obviously how you're training differently, because you're much more connected to you and yourself?
I actually got on the erg today and did a little row, and I was very pleasantly surprised at the splits that I could hold, given the fact that I haven't been on an erg in probably like 7 or 8 months. I haven't done any rowing in 7 or 8 months. I still run and lift weights and do all kinds of other training and swim and cycle and everything. But I would say it's my fitness in rowing sense is obviously lower than when I was rowing full time. But something that I talk about a little bit with regards to like building fitness is that you can't be fit if you're not healthy. Like, health is the foundation of any kind of high performance, which you could say building fitness is, right? And that is something that I have now, which I didn't have when I was rowing, is I didn't have health. I was getting sick all the time. I get injured all the time. I could do some good numbers on the erg, not like, you know, the best, but pretty good, like at an elite level, acceptable at an elite level. And now I obviously couldn't hit those numbers anymore, but I have my health, and that is making the training a lot more enjoyable. And I also feel more well-rounded, and I can pretty much go into anything at the moment and just pick it up and just start doing it, you know? So I pretty much say that I feel fitter than I did. I'm definitely stronger than I was in terms of the gym, but I also am starting to feel fitter than I was back then.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's my experience has been very similar in terms of a much higher level of overall feeling of peace, of calm, of well-being, but also energy. My energy is a lot higher than it was. And one of the things I find useful, if you're working in an environment that can get quite stressful mentally during the day when you're doing that kind of work, rather than pushing it away, and get to the end of the day, I pause during the day and say, right, that feels uncomfortable. Where do I feel that? And I move into that feeling, and it processes very, very quickly, so that I'm not getting this buildup of all this junk over time, which is very damaging to ourselves. And that's been really nice, which is probably why I'm sleeping so much better at night, because there's nothing to process at the end of the day.
Exactly. Rest. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's the same. It's like I'll do like if I go for a run or something and it's pretty intense, you know, maybe the heart rate's up like a bit higher than just your standard steady state or whatever. And then I get back and I feel that, you know, there's certain physiological kind of signs that of what level you've, you know, trained at, you know, and what if you feel like you're not hungry after you've done a big training session, well, it means you've probably stimulated your sympathetic nervous system pretty like decently, you know, because your body's not feeling ready for food and you need to kind of relax before you're ready to do that kind of stuff. So sometimes you know, I'll come back off a run or off a training session or weights or the same thing. You do some really heavy deadlifts, your nervous system's going to be like pretty jacked up after that. And so I'll, but back in the day, I would have just, oh, yep, sweet, put the food in and then like go about my day, straight to work, sit at the desk, go through. And then sure enough, yeah, get to the end of the day, I can't sleep. You know, and I'm like, I should be so tired. Like, I should fall straight asleep. I've done 3 sessions, massive weight session, 2 big rows or whatever. can't sleep or go to sleep and then wake up at 3 a.m. and stay awake until I have to go to rowing, you know, which did happen a lot and it was very distressful. But nowadays it's okay, I've done this to myself, which is training, which I wanted to do, and it's important that I do it and it's good for me to do it. But now I have to feel the effects of what I've done.
Yeah.
So that'll just mean, yeah, just sit down for a little bit, you know, rather than jumping straight into work, give yourself 30 minutes or so to just sit on the couch and just chill out and just feel the effects of that, of whatever's happened to you. Like, and that's something you can obviously do if it's, mentally stressful, like with work and stuff, it's the exact same, but it's the same with, physical. And physical, you're not just getting out of a little bit of a emotional state. You've done some big physiological changes that you need to calm down. But as soon as you can get back into that kind of, as soon as you can feel that and resolve that, get back into kind of a calmer state, then you kind of just feel normal again, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting for me because depending on the tension, I'll notice where the tension is and you'll be holding a specific part of your body in tension. That's what I find.
Oh, 100%.
And that's that's where I'm going to sit. And it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, I didn't even realize I'm completely like clenching my legs together or something.
Yeah, or why am I holding my shoulder like that?
Yeah, exactly. Why am I sitting? Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's, so you do find, oh, I've got these tensions and you go, oh, I'm just going to relax into that. And sure enough, when you relax, you're like, okay, I feel uncomfortable. You know, every time you relax into it, you go, I feel a little bit uncomfortable being relaxed right now. And you're okay, so that's why I was tensing. It was in the app, Matthew talks about those mental reactions, right? And how we react to certain sensations by thinking about them. But sometimes it is really basic. We like react to a sensation by physically like clenching up, which you could say that the thinking is also a physical thing because it is just something that we're generating. But
they're all tied together, aren't they?
They are. It's all physical. That's the point. It's all physical, but it can manifest, like you said, in those ways. We literally, like, we're clenching muscles, you know, in reaction. Yeah.
And if you don't think you do that, by the way, if you grind your teeth, that's what you're doing when you're asleep.
Yep, 100%. Grind your teeth. Like, I don't know how many different examples there are. Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I used to get a lot of leg cramps and stuff, some of which was down to being low on magnesium. But once I got those levels right, whenever I get them now, invariably something will be on my mind. So if I just lie there and sit into the cramp instead of running around trying to free it off physically, it relaxes. And sometimes it takes a few minutes, but it just goes and it's gone. And there'll be a memory sometimes. Other times it's just a piece of tension.
Yeah.
But it's such a really cool way of doing it because you start to think, well, I don't think there's a lot of things that could physically present themselves that we couldn't just sit in over a period of time, however long it takes, and just let it resolve itself.
100%. And because you start to see that whatever physical tension that you've accumulated and that you have is a result of, at some level, you being having a reaction to the way things are in the world. So it's not necessarily, it can be very much the way that you are in the world and reacting to the way that the world is also reacting to the way that you see the,
your interpretation,
in the world. It's the same thing, more or less, but it's all of these ailments that we end up with are usually a result of a long way down the line. It's like a long way back. At some point we were reacting and we didn't want to accept the situation that we're in. And we hold on to that non-acceptance until it eventually builds up in our body with enough discomfort that we have to really notice it, which is, it starts out as just discomfort and in sensation, but it goes obviously much further into extreme chronic illnesses, which really are a manifestation of how we've been living our life and what we've been willing to experience and what we haven't been willing to experience.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I found that when I first started doing this, I mentioned to you there was some discomfort here in my solar plexus.
Mm-hmm.
And when I really settled down and thought into that, some memories from 50 and 55 years ago came up when I was little.
Mm.
And it was like, what? You mean that's been sat there all that time?
Yeah. And you go, you mean I've been living like that for all that time and all of my decisions have been influenced by that belief or that judgment that I've been holding on to? And then when you can see, when you start to see that, you go, oh yeah, no wonder I'm the way I am.
Yeah.
You start to be like, no wonder I am hurting, or no wonder I'm getting sick, or I have this thing going on. And Matthew's, he understands it much deeper, in that sense of, you know, different areas of the body tend to have different relationships with how we go about life. And so if we have certain areas in our lower back, it can be tied to our relationship with our own physicality and how we feel about ourselves physically, you know, or with the shoulder, you know, is the overreaching, you know, we take on too much responsibility that's not ours. Stuff like that, you know, he has a very deep understanding of that. But that, yeah, that's super interesting as well.
Well, it is. It's interesting too, because shoulder was one for me and lower back was another one, both of which now I have no problems with.
Yeah. And how did it come about that it like healed? Like, did you just do what?
Well,
you
know,
I just leave it?
No, I pretty much in the meditation, I'd think, you know, my shoulder feels sore. So, you know, I'll just go and sit literally and just focus in on why it feels uncomfortable. And just sit with it and just experience the discomfort. And then memories would start to come up.
Mm.
And I'd start to think about them. And then the discomfort got less and the movement got a little better. And then other memories would come up. And then all of a sudden I thought, I'm not thinking about anything. There's no discomfort anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was just, yeah, literally, that was it.
it's amazing how it just needs to happen, right? And just the body takes care of it. There was nothing that you needed to do, was there? Like you just...
Yeah, not really. I had to pay attention to it.
You had to feel it, sorry,
yeah,
but you
yeah,
didn't
and
have
not,
to.
Not in here, but yeah. Let it feel. So I've got some pressure there. What is that pressure? You know, and then that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
awesome.
The other thing was, what you learned to do then is you notice that because your movement's better, then you can actually move better in the other things you're trying to do with that arm. You're not limited by it.
Mm, mm. I had a good experience for me, which was really, you know, stuck in my mind of this process and how it works, but I was still getting that knee pain. This is kind of the resolution of the knee pain, I guess, actually, in the right knee. And it happened when I was cycling. So this is kind of application even when you're moving. I was just cycling along out on an actual road, so not a stationary bike. Everything's going on in the world. And my knee starts hurting in this specific spot, just on that inside of the kneecap. And it just kept being there. I was like, okay, I'll change my foot position a little bit. I'll sit on my saddle differently. Move my hand. And it's just fidgeting, you know, just lots of fidgeting to try and make it more comfortable again. But eventually I was just like, you know what? I'm going to practice what I preach here. After probably about 10 or 15 minutes of that fidgeting, I was like, I'm just going to practice what I preach here. I'm just going to keep riding and the pain is going to be there. I'm not going to try and change it at all. I'm just going to keep riding however it feels normal to ride and just let that pain be there and just feel it. And sure enough, it got more painful momentarily. But then I started to notice also I was getting this pain in my, like on my right lumbar,
mm-hmm.
right? On the same side. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. So then that was a different kind of pain though. It was like a heat almost, like a tingling heat sensation building up in that area. And then the same thing happened. It kind of spread all the way down there and down my ITB band. So the outside of my thigh, that whole massive area of fascia started to get hot. I could feel it. Like it just felt hot and tight and it was getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And that lasted probably about 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden it just completely relaxed and just went away. And the pain in my back went away and the knee pain was gone. Like in the space of like 15 minutes, all because I just let it go. And this was something that had bugged me with my rowing for, I don't know, like four months or so, you know? So it's just crazy how it just takes care of itself.
Yeah. It's a funny thing. You know, I've said to, for in health for such a long time to people, look, for me, when something's wrong, the early stages of it, it's like a kind of, you feel the breeze across your skin, but you're not really aware of it. You just kind of notice it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ignore the messenger, the next time there's a bit more breeze and the next time you get a slap on the face and the next time it opens the door and it punches you in the chin to get your attention. But because we're so busy and we're so wrapped up in here so much of the time and disconnected from this, that we ignore that. And the only time we really notice it is when there is a real big health problem or a health emergency.
Exactly. It's when we can't miss it anymore.
That's right. But if you will spend time every day, and what I do now is as soon as I wake up, I just relax through my entire body and I just let that time be. Let's have a feel where I notice things. And I start to notice all sorts of things are going on.
Yeah.
That you never paid attention to. So I can almost hear noise. I can feel twitches and spasms and the odd little kind of pop of pain that comes and goes. I'm like, there is so much activity going on that we're just not aware of unless you sit there and go through it.
Mm.
And then it becomes a really interesting thing as to what's happening with this machinery, if you will, as it's getting itself ready, it's organizing itself, what's actually going on.
And you see how much information you could be missing. And then people wonder why we're confused about life, or why we do things that hurt each other, or why we make decisions that are not very intelligent some of the time, you know. And it's, well, if you're disconnected from all of that information, you really don't have a lot to go off, you know. So you, if you're doing things from a disconnected space, you really are kind of doing the best you can, you know. But the solution and the way to get better, and this is tied to that theme of, you know, high performance, is to reconnect, get all of that information, and understand that your sensory experience of the world before it's been interpreted by thought is the most rational and objective experience and understanding that you can have of the world.
The only way you can feel the world is through your senses.
Exactly, exactly. And as soon as you have that experience of thinking about your senses or what you've experienced, then there's a layer of interpretation, right? So if you want to be a high performer in the world, or you want to be an elite athlete, you want to be an elite businessman, you want to be an elite healer, or whoever, no, whatever. It doesn't have to be you do something that you get paid a lot. It's just, do you want to be a high performing partner? Do you want to be the best partner to someone? Do you want to be the best parent to someone? You know, like all of these things are tied to, you want to be able to make the best decisions about your situation. And the way that you make the best decisions is by having the best information to go off based on what's happening. And if you're disconnected from that information, you're just not going to be able to make those decisions which are really in your best interest or the best interest of everyone else, you know? And so it's that, it's something that I've found like really fascinating to be able to, because the reason it's been fascinating for me is because for a long time with sport, I was like, there is just no way that this is sustainable. Like you can't, high performance is inherently harmful. I was kind of starting to think, you know, but it was only because all examples of high performance that I'd seen were just examples of people that had disconnected so much that they could do incredible feats of, they could endure incredible things and do significant amounts of, put themselves through significant amounts of pain and sacrifice so much of their lives to do things because they just didn't feel it. They didn't feel the effect of what was happening. And so I could kind of sense that. So I thought, oh, well, high performance must be something that's just not, we're not meant to do. But it was when I started to understand this, the connection with the body and with being able to heal, and the fact that we can actually do things from a place of connectedness rather than from a place of disconnection, I was like, oh, this is actual real high performance, and that we actually are all high performing, but we just are we're just disconnected. And some people's disconnection means that they can ignore 90% of their life and put everything into 10%, such as like an elite sport or something, which makes them a high performer. Whereas some people's disconnection doesn't give them, they don't have that talent or those opportunities. And so it just looks like trauma or an addiction or disease or something like that. But it's still disconnection, you know. And if everyone gets back to that connectedness, and that's the real essence of high performance. Yeah.
If you could summarize, what message would you hope people get from this podcast?
Probably that. I don't know. That was a bit of a
I asked that to see if you wanted to add, because what you said there was kind of the answer to that question. You've been preempting the questions really well.
Well, see, this is, I mean, this sounds funny, and maybe it sounds, some people are going to be like, oh yeah, whatever, mate. But like that, this is that kind of, I read over the kind of general ideas of the questions that you wanted to ask and stuff. I literally breezed over it, and I was like, "Yeah, it looks really good and stuff." But there it maybe does seem like there's been some natural flow to this conversation that's been in, we've both kind of just intuited where it needs to go, you know. And it's something that neither of us probably thought about, but we just started talking, and. It's that natural intelligence. It just goes where it kind of needs to go, and you just do what feels right, you know? And so
Well, I tell you what else I think it is because I'm very much feeling my way through the conversation and not thinking my way through the conversation. I know you're doing the same thing.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And so it feels very natural, you know, and you do tend to kind of intuit those things that people are interested in, you know. And I get that with clients a lot, is that I'll you just feel what they're up to on a certain day or what they're feeling, you know, and you just say it to them, and you can see them be a bit like, how on earth did you know that, you know? But it's not something that's supernatural. I think that's probably a good message, you know. Any talent for this kind of thing, this feeling, sensitivity, is not something supernatural. If you have someone that you're around that you know, and they seem to always kind of know what's up with you, and you're like, you're not in my head, how do you know? It's like, no, because they're in their body and they can feel how you're making them feel, you know. And it's us being able to, it's something that we naturally do, is interpret those feelings and know something about another person. And it's the important thing is that and being a high performer and being good at whatever it is that you want to do is not something that is unnatural and is out of reach for people. It's something that's very natural, and we just need to get back to that we can't do these things from a place of disconnectedness anymore.
Well, I think it's a powerful. It's also really important in business. Years ago, a friend of mine set up a letting agency, and I helped to do it. And one of the kind of the process pathways we developed was the original interview with the potential tenant. And the most important part of that process was, how do we feel about them? Not what do we think of them? What do the references look like? All the rest of it, what they've said, how do we feel about them? And by taking that approach, she was able, I think she had one difficult tenant in 10 years.
Yeah.
You were reading that. You were reading the information using everything, not just this, because this would lead you astray. It always has done with me. The more I've got a great brain, and it's like a sword, isn't it? You know, you either grab the blade end or the handle end.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to trust your sensations in your body.
Yeah.
Because if you'll do that, you have a much easier path on all aspects of everything, not just business, not just, you know, relationships with yourself. How do you feel?
Yeah.
What's really going on with what you just said?
Mm.
Yeah, because I think if we were more in touch with our feelings, we'd say things in a more heartfelt way than we would in a very cold, calculating way to a lot of people.
Yeah,
I think it would be a much more, you would have a much better time of it.
100%. And that it's that, like you said, you know, you've got a great brain, and I think I've got a pretty good brain as well. And it's, you've got to know what your thinking is for. It's a tool, you know. That's the important thing, is that it's not a tool for relating to someone else, you know. It's a tool for communicating pretty mechanical, technical things about life. That it gives us we can get a little bit more specific on things, but we can't pick up the general with it, you know. And the general is not like, I don't even like, 99% of life is the general, and it's everything can be felt and understood through your senses and through your feeling. But occasionally we need to describe things to each other, because I can't, you know, Matthew talked about, if we go down to the shops and give you directions down the street, I can't just say, sit there and feel what it feels like for me to go down the street, and then you all automatically know. It's like, no, I need to describe it to you. But that's the function of thinking. That's what it's there for. But it's not a tool for then, if you're having a bad day, me thinking about you and going, I wonder if he's having a bad day. It's like, no, I would know that immediately just by being around you and just feeling that, you know. And so in that, how we relate to ourselves and how we relate to the natural world and everything, you know, and then you see how important that would be for business, right? Because it's all, so much of it is just relationships. It's not just sitting there and putting numbers in spreadsheets. It's transactions. So it's communicating, and it's making sure that when you're doing giving someone a service, that they're really getting something out of it because you care. And you'll feel bad if you give them something cheap, you know? So yeah, 100%. It all just, everything becomes simple when you're looking in the right place for the information.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So what are you up to right now? Other than talking to me, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. As in like work-wise and stuff. Yeah. So I live in Portland, Victoria, which is like a coastal town in Victoria, Australia. So, and I just work with, you know, some online clients and some face-to-face clients in the gym and coaching them this kind of stuff, you know, specific to their situation. So I have some guys that are athletes, you know, that are looking to get that kind of back into that. They're looking to get that high performance, get the most out of themselves. But then also people that are just trying to figure out health at its most basic level, because that's what I've found is they're the same, right? It's the health is like high performance is, like we've said, is high performance is just a extension of good health, really, you know, and good physical connectedness. But yeah, I don't know. I just coaching people, and I post a fair amount on social media. So there's always that. I've got a newsletter where I talk about this every week for people if they're interested in learning some of these topics.
How can people reach you?
My Instagram, Original Source Performance, is probably where I'm most active. But website, Original Source Performance as well. So yeah.
All right. If you email me those, I'll stick those in the show notes as well for people.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So what do you think the future holds for you? What would you like it to hold for you?
Well, I actually wrote a little preparing some content for the next month. And one thing that I was really it was a little post on this, like, why am I doing this, you know? And I think that the world is in a not the best state, and we're at a place where we are as humans, we're quite disconnected from the impact that we're having on it, and also and not just environmentally, but on each other, because we're a part of the world, and we're in a place where we don't necessarily treat each other as well as we could. We don't relate to each other. We've got wars, and we've got more capacity than ever to do very severe damage with our conflict, you know? And so I think that the world needs healing, right? And I think that the Undo app is really great for that. But I would also like to help people who have a really, who have a talent or who have a great capacity to help. I would love to help them get there to a point where they feel they can really do that, and they can do it from a connected space with their body, so that they know that they're not just working hard and grinding like a dog at something which is going to have a net negative. You know, we don't have any space for, I don't think we have any space for inefficient action or just hard work for the sake of it anymore. We're kind of at a point where we need to make sure that the work that we're doing is really is you know, going in the right direction and helping people. So that's something that I'm really kind of passionate about, is how can the people in those spaces, you know, those high performers, how can they get to a place where they're really physically connected and really making those decisions which are in, you know, in their best interest, which when you are physically connected, you realize that your best interest is the same as everyone else's best interest. And that we're all really pretty simple, you know, and that we all just want to feel safe, not get hurt, have enough food, and be connected. And you know, and it's, I'd love to help I think that the world, there's a lot of vulnerable people that are not in very good positions to be able to like change their situation. And there's a lot cast on them, you know, because people at the top aren't making good decisions that are ethically minded. So I'd love to get people at that level physically connected and making the right decisions to make it better for people who don't have as many choices.
Yeah.
You know, so that's something that, I don't know, that's something that I'm really passionate about. And I would hope that's something I can work with in the future, you know.
That's really, really nice to hear. It really is good to hear, you know, with especially with the skill that, you know, because you've got such a good combination of skills now. And you can see.
Well, hopefully. Yeah.
No, you do. Like, for looking from my view, you do. So you can do some really cool stuff with it, because you've been down the path of hyper performance, which very few people actually walk down, and you've seen the risks and the trauma and the damage attached to that. But you've also recognized that we can all do that if we approach it the right way. You know, we can do our own version of it anyway.
Yeah, and we need high performers. We need people that are really intelligent and really smart and can do a lot for us. Because that's the great thing about a high performer is a high performer who's who really is focused on helping people. You know, someone who I like look up to a lot in that space is the founder of Patagonia, Yvon Chouinard. And he is the example, I think, of a high performer who is vigorously ethically minded, you know, and he really stands behind it. And you know, he's going to donate the entire profits of Patagonia to looking after the environment, and their whole thing has been about that. And he's made a profitable business about that, you know. And so I think there's people like him out there that have those skills and that capacity to really make the world better for people. And if you help them get into that place where they're really physically connected, not only will they be more efficient at what they're trying to do, but also they're going to be going about it from a really good place. They're going to be coming at it from the right place, not from a place of profit or of ego and status and all this kind of things. That because that kind of stuff, it will all come as a byproduct of really doing it well. Oh, yeah. Anyway, you know. But it's people that are, yeah. Sorry,
I was going to say, there's nothing wrong with profit as long as it's not profit at any cost.
No, I mean, Patagonia has been one of the like most profitable clothing brands, probably one of the best clothing brands of the last, you know, 50 years. They're 50 years. I mean, they've stood around for 50 years, which is pretty good, even in itself. So they must have been profitable. But then they also go and they really encourage people not to just buy fast fashion, you know, and to when they make their products, they very concerned about quality, you know, and it's all about quality and functionality because there's a certain beauty in that which sells, you know. And it's if we can and his ideas on business and how you can make that the attractive thing about it, not that you can buy lots of it or that it's exclusive or anything, but this should it that you can make it attractive to sell something that is so ethically, you know, backed, you know. And so it's changing that for people and making the world better at that really big scale, you know, with people that are really highly skilled. So yeah.
That has been such a delightful conversation, and what a powerful way for me to start my day having a conversation like this. So thank you so much.
Yeah, well, it's a good way for me to go to bed now, you know, inspired about the day to come.
Yeah. That was really good. We'll draw that to a close now, but just stay awesome. On. I'm going to stop the recording just real quick.